Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Dr. Emily Osmond.
Thank you. At this time, I'd like to swear you in. Do you swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. We'd like to go ahead and give you an opportunity to respond if you have anything to add to what Mr. Stoll had presented. Thank you. And board members that have any questions for Dr. Osmond?
Do I have a couple? Thank you for being here to answer them. Were you involved in the discussion on termination of this client?
Yeah.
No. So no one consulted you as to whether you would recommend the to terminate or not?
I'm just an associate at the practice. I don't make those types of decisions. I had known about kind of the threats and the harassment that was going on, but I was not made aware. I wasn't part of the decision making.
Okay. So I know when you saw this cat, there was documentation in the medical record that you would do a follow-up the next day. Did you do that follow-up call?
The staff did.
The staff did a call?
On December 1st.
Okay. And were you aware that the owner had requested to speak with you at any time between when you saw the cat and when maybe the December 7th visit when or discussion with the office manager about termination?
No.
So not on the 4th or on the 5th did you ever receive a request to call the owner?
No.
And were you involved in a conversation with the owner about adding the feline aggression to standard discharge instructions or communication with clients as they leave the clinic?
No.
Okay. Wait. All right, this makes that easy. I don't know that I have any other questions. Anybody else?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Tammy Watt, CBT.
And David Stolper, legal counsel for Dr. Watt. CBT. CBT. Soon to be.
Ms. Watt, we'll go ahead and swear you in at this time. Do you swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. And then do you have anything that you'd like to respond to the summary that Mr. Stoll provided?
No.
Okay. I'd now like to give board members the opportunity to ask any questions. So Dr. James, we'll start with you.
I think you probably know my questions by now. Were you involved in the decision to terminate this client?
Yes.
And who amongst the team would have made a decision like that?
I really don't need the doctor's approval to do that. When clients are not friendly to the staff, it's a given that I'm going to terminate them.
Okay, so you made that decision on your own to terminate the client?
Yes.
And what was the reasoning behind that? I mean, I understand there was some concern with staff, but what was the final thing that you said, okay, we're done?
His threats. When I spoke with him and gave him the behaviorist's number and name, he wanted me to call them for him. But I don't know Dr. Moffitt's schedule. I don't know his schedule. So I would have never scheduled appointments at specialists for any of the clients. That's the client's responsibility.
Yeah. So you terminated him after the conversation on 12/7 that you had with him regarding the referral to Dr. Moffitt?
Yes.
But there had been other communication with staff prior to that that led to the termination?
Yes. He had called the front office staff and demanded to speak to Dr. Osmond, but he just wasn't nice, so I took over the call.
So So, because that was one of my questions too, was it sounds like the client had called to speak to Dr. Osmond on the 4th and the 5th and was never put through to a doctor. Is that standard protocol for the practice?
No, we do leave a message for them to call, but Dr. Osmond she was so busy. And I interceded and took the call. If it's something that my staff can take care of and not bother the doctors, we do take care of that for them.
And you felt like this was something that the staff effectively took care of?
Yes.
So just for clarification, you knew that the client wanted to talk to the doctor, and as the hospital manager director, that message to the doctor.
The staff came in and told me that Mr. Hebert was on the phone, Herbert, and I said, well, Dr. Emily's with a client. Can I take the message, or can I speak to him? So I got on the phone.
But it wasn't clear to you that he still wanted to talk to the doctor, even though he called twice?
I knew he wanted to talk to Dr. Osmond. She had really done everything she can medically, and at that point it was more of a behavior problem that he needed a referral to Dr. Moffitt.
And did you give her the opportunity to talk to the client?
No.
So because she didn't get to talk to the client, that is a part of the complaint on why she's here today. So as standard protocol, would you say that that's a good idea to not inform a doctor that somebody's asking to speak to them?
I should have told her, but I didn't.
Okay. And then were you involved in the conversation regarding the aggression?
Because of his behavior.
That was my question.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry.
When you handled the issue of...
Pardon me?
When you handled the issue of the complaint wanting to talk to the doctor, had there been instances of what you would consider inappropriate comments, behavior? And what I'd like you to do is, we hear this all the time, and there are all degrees of what might be construed as inappropriate behavior on the part of a client. So feel free to tell us what happened, what was said. Don't be afraid of the verbiage or anything. Tell us what happened.
When I got him on the phone, he explained to me what was going on, and I explained Dr. Osmond was with clients and can't talk to him right now. Mm-hmm. I then, he explained what was going on, and I said, well, there is a veterinary behaviorist, Dr. Moffitt, that we refer clients to with their pets when there's a behavior problem. This sounds like, you know, there must be a behavior problem. Mm-hmm. I did ask if the cat was okay from the visit, and the cat was fine. Mm-hmm. It was just this behavior that had come after the visit.
But that was your conversation on the 7th. Was that the 7th conversation that you're referring to now? The one that occurred on December 7th?
I'm sorry, I have a copy of our notes if Tammy could refer to that conversation.
The 7th, the owner called our boarding reception instead of the hospital. Owner was upset with the cats fighting, very upset with the cats fighting since last Thursday. He was happy with the care he received, although the care he received on the boarding side, but the cat never boarded with us. It came in for an appointment, and the only reason they came to our office was because their normal vet, regular vet, couldn't get them in that day. Otherwise, we would have never seen this cat. He was very upset that his cat was never warned that it could become aggressive. Well, we don't we don't tell owners that. He owns a bangle. They're aggressive to begin with. I shouldn't have to tell an owner of any cat that you may take this cat home, and it may become aggressive with your other cat. It may become aggressive with you. I don't think that was my place to say that. And he said, I would have you pass this message on to Tammy, which is me. He said he found several articles online supporting this claim. He told that he expected Horizon to help him, whether it's working with a behaviorist or medication. I told him that the person who wrote this said that they would refer it to me. So I called the male owner, Mr. Herbert, who was never in the office at all. He said it was a very good visit, and he would like a written statement stating what can happen when you bring your pet home from the hospital, or other pets in the household, or how the other pets in the household will react. I immediately recommended Dr. Kelly Moffitt. He wanted to call back from the doctor today. I told the owner, Dr. Moffitt does not work here. The owners can email her to set up an appointment with the office at VCA. He and his wife have slept in separate beds in the past 7 nights due to their angry, upset Bengal cats. They are litter mates and have been together since they were born. The owners have brought them to the vet together and never had this problem. His wife screamed so loud from a cat fight he had over the past week. The owner's blood pressure is so high right now. The male owner said, if we do not write a statement stating that what can happen when pets come from the animal hospital, this won't be the last time you hear from me. So there's the threat.
Okay, so you're talking about, just back to my original question, this was the conversation on the 7th.
Yes.
So when he called on the, assuming that this did call on the 4th and the 5th and asked to talk to the doctor, why did it wait till the 7th before he got to talk to anybody?
I must have got my days wrong. I didn't know he called on the 4th and 5th. Maybe he spoke to a receptionist. Okay. Premises on November 4th, I want them to know this. Oh, he spoke to reception. And he was not offered to speak to Dr. Osmond or referred out for a behavior issue. And then he sent an email.
And then you called.
And then I called. So on the 4th, he called, spoke to reception. I knew nothing about it. He sent an email is when I found out about it. And then he called. But in the meantime, I had been discussing this with Dr. Patterson and Dr. Penn, which are the owners.
So this cat goes home, is having significant behavioral issues, no doubt about that, enough that it's not something you would even handle in your practice, you'd have to refer out.
Yes.
And he asks to speak to a doctor, and reception decides that that's not warranted? Or did it just not go to...
Reception staff advised that the issue should resolve in a few days. He didn't ask on the 4th to speak to a doctor. But on the 5th, he sent an email. And then on the 7th, he called our boarding reception, and that's when I got involved.
Right. So on the 5th, when he sent the email, what happened?
Explaining that although they were happy with the visit, they were not warned of what could happen between the cats upon the return home. He wanted the premise to implement a policy where pet owners with multiple cat households were made aware of feline non-aggression or recognition aggression.
So it wasn't clear to staff at the clinic that that was a request for somebody to call him?
No.
Okay. I don't have any additional questions.
So if I'm hearing you right, we had a very upset owner. And we all deal with very upset owners all the time in our practices. What I'm trying to understand is how that rose to a level such that you made the decision to fire him as a client. You spoke, the only thing I heard was a statement, you'll hear from me.
Demanding a policy change?
And
statement and okay. Policy.
But that's up to you to make that policy or not.
Right, but that goes through my owners also, Dr. Penn and Dr. Patterson.
I guess my question is, my question is, does that
unreasonable work? Demands?
Okay. So we have unreasonable demands and the statement you'll hear from me. Those are the
yes.
Those are the reasons for firing.
Yes, and he was angry.
Sure. Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions from board members? Okay. Thank you very much. All right, so we're going to have you step back, Ms. Ristol. So we do have the complainant present.
You do.
All right, go ahead and step forward.
Happy to be here.
All right, and you can go ahead and state your name for the record.
I am Michael Herbert.
Thank you, and you are the complainant in this case?
I am the complainant in all three of these.
Thank you, and then I'd like to go ahead and swear you in.
Absolutely.
Do you swear or affirm the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Absolutely the truth.
All right, thank you. So we have read the materials that you've provided, and so now you may address the board.
Okay, thank you very much. I think Dr. James is on the right track here, because what we need to remember here is that after the treatment, we never got to talk to a vet. Facts that they just gave, some of them are misleading. We called twice on the 4th because we were in such crisis. These two cats that we happen to have, while they are Bengals, they're not terribly aggressive. They were the most affiliative brothers you could ever imagine since we brought them home together on day one. Constantly sleeping together, you could have them eat 2 feet apart. Yeah, once in a while, usually a couple minutes a day, they would run around the house fairly hard, but incredibly affiliative cats. When Bugatti got home from his 1 hour visit, the feline non-recognition aggression presented immediately. Same cat carriers. Something happened in this office. Before we get to some of the things they claimed, and by the way, thank you, Dr. Nosley, is it? Mm-hmm. I don't believe I was aggressive. I certainly didn't swear. I wanted some help and accountability. We were in incredible crisis. I was stressed. So let's first think about one thing. I provided numerous times the soap here. The SOAP has three things under plan. One of them is behavioral. And they claim they're not qualified to deal with behavioral issues, yet they put it in the plan I discovered. They knew there was another cat at home. Please look at the plan, open the materials. I mean, it's amazing to me that in this plan, they can list three different possible causes, and they list three possible causes, and they say there's no obvious explanation. I'm 66. I cracked a tooth this week. I'm losing my hearing. When they say in their plan they're going to call us the next day, they should call. Instead, we got this junk text that I acknowledge we saw 3 or 4 hours later, and we were in the middle of the crisis. You have a declaration from Dr. Dodman at Tufts University, one of the most respected animal behaviorists there is, who says, had they actually done what they said they would do in their own plan and called the next day, from a vet. The receptionists weren't qualified, as I think you're getting onto, to handle lung problems. We didn't know if the medication that they had prescribed for Bugatti was causing this behavior. We didn't know if it was something they had done in the office. And so Dr. Dodman gave you a declaration that said had they called, they would have, any vet, not a behavioralist, any vet, CAT 101, should know that this was feline non-recognition aggression, and they would have told us to immediately separate the cats. That might have saved this 11 months of agony and $6,500 that we had to spend to fix this problem. And you heard from their own testimony, they didn't let us talk to a vet. In my materials that I provided for this hearing, I provided to you a copy of a letter that was sent to this board in 2021 in a case for Dr. Patterson that set forth their office policy. It's on page 12 of the materials I provided. I should have been allowed to talk to the vet. I disagree with their version of the facts that on the 4th we didn't ask to talk to a vet. Why do you think we called back the second time? It wasn't to invite them to a housewarming party. It was a hell of a crisis we were in the middle of. So, we were abandoned. I have a friend, a dear friend, and he retired as the public defender for the city and county of Sacramento. He has seen a lot of things. I went over this case in detail with him, and he kept going back to the fact you were abandoned by this practice. You can't give, I have included in my materials the law on a veterinary client relationship. In order to have one, when you have one under the law, you are required to be available for further consultation until you have a proper referral. Let's talk about that referral for a second, because they keep making light of it. The referral either requires my consent or a request from another veterinarian. Scaredy Cat did not request it, and I never consented to it. Under the, The American Medical Veterinary, whatever, that I'm going to get the terminology wrong. Their rules say that medical records are confidential. Are they not confidential in Arizona? Because I'll drop this if they're not. If they are confidential, they violated that rule. And there's no facts anywhere to suggest that I consented. And Scaredy Cat has told me over and over that they never requested it. And Scaredy Cat does other things right, by the way. They know how to give a estimate. Why is it? There was no testimony about the amount of the estimate. There was nothing in the medical record, like Tracy Randow told me they need to know. I don't even know the amount. I don't know what it said. They didn't even mention what my wife looks like. They have a choice. Either issue a written estimate or don't, but note it in the medical record contemporaneously. I asked for the medical record after they had counsel, not this guy, their other counsel. They didn't provide anything. So what we have here is a whole set of violations that are serious. And if you go back to the soap, if you look at the soap, if she puts behavior in the soap, and then I call, and she won't talk to me, she caused this. Horizon caused this. There is no other explanation for this. I don't know what happened at the visit, but it happened at the visit. Did they mishandle the cat so it excreted its anal glands? Were dogs in the room prior? I realize you guys are short staffed. You don't have the staff to do all this investigation. But something went seriously wrong here. They caused this, we tried to talk to them, and they completely abandoned us. And when I talk about the, when you talk about the need for an instruction here, or for the need for something, even if you don't want to go as far as I would like you to go, which I personally believe CAT 101 now says, and there are lots of articles on it, so for them to claim it never happens, you have declarations from a woman, a CAT behaviorist who handles 1,000 calls a year, and she says every week she gets calls from visits to the vet. You have another declaration from another CAT behaviorist who says the same thing. In the original complaint materials, there were 6 other letters. This is very common. Let me put it really simply. Anytime it happens, whether it's major like ours or minor, what you are adding is stress to the animal that just got treated. Why is that reasonable under the basic ethics rule, which I have cited in here? Let me see if I can find it easily.
We probably know what that one is, so I don't think you need to look for that. One of the questions I have, though,
can I just ask, before we ask questions of him, is there anything else that you'd like to add before you receive questions?
Can I have 30 seconds to just quickly flip through my thing here that I prepared and just see. So, we've covered the estimate, and I'll add to that. You know, if they claim they gave an estimate, to my knowledge today, they didn't even say it's still in the medical records. Where is it noted in the medical records? Is there really a board policy that it has to be noted in the medical records? Because to my knowledge, it's not there. The consent we covered, the abandonment we covered, the referral. Again, let me add this. Moffitt wasn't available for a month. When I talked to Dr. Gottman, what he told me was, if they had actually called and they had diagnosed it, what they would have properly done is called Moffitt's office and say, we have a really bad case here. Is there any chance you can help us out and give us an immediate appointment? Because this is really bad. On the instructions, I disagree with Mr. Stoll. It says before a surgical patient or hospitalized animal is discharged. What's the name of this practice? Horizon Animal Hospital. That's not an emergency facility, but it is an animal hospital. I think this rule applies to them. And when you look at what they wrote on the receipt 0 instructions. No instructions, because all the receipt says is, this is what happened during the visit, this is what you're gonna see. There was no guidance. They didn't even tell us when to start and stop the medication they prescribed. No instructions, let alone the ones on feline non-recognition aggression. The other thing that has not even been discussed at all, and Mr. Harris, thank you for asking that question. The other thing that hasn't even been discussed at all is the false advertising, the promises they make on their website. Again, screenshots are in the materials I provided to you. They provide that they are going to cover every contingency. They say they're going to have great communication. So is it really great communication if they violate their own policy that they promised to this board that exists and you just heard testimony that they didn't follow it? I personally believe that because they caused this harm, and yes, I admit, I can't explain why, All I know is it never happened before. It happened immediate after Bugatti got home out of the same carrier he has always used his entire life to these incredible, loving, affiliated cats. Something happened there. I believe it was malpractice. I also believe it was grossly negligent. It was reckless for the way for them not to let us talk to a vet when we asked over and over and over again. And that email on the 5th, yeah, it wasn't a model of clarity, but it was a scream that we are suffering here. And on the 7th, it was a scream, we are suffering, we need help. Don't refer us, help us refer, help us get help. That's what improving the quality of care in the regulation means, helping us solve the problem. Yeah, it's a lot. It's emotional. It was a hell of a roller coaster for a really long time. And we were told, and this is why I encourage the board to keep it seriously. You're very serious. Take me seriously. We were told that we were lucky. If it gets out of control, the cats may never get back together. And in fact, we have friends who live in Arizona, who lived in Arizona, and their sister who lives in Indiana, this was one of the letters in the first complaint, their cats die, never getting back together. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, members of the board, in order to keep the record clean, I would ask that if you have questions, can we take them case by case? So we ask the question as it relates to, you know, the two vets, one at a time, and then to Ms. Watt. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so we already asked questions to the respondents.
So now
case
we'll,
by case.
Yes.
So now, if you have questions for the complainant,
just verify which case I'm asking it about.
Let's take them one case at a time.
Okay.
So basically, if any board members have questions related to case 2506 regarding Emily Osmond DVM for the complaint.
Thank you. That's much more eloquent than I just said.
Okay. All right. So
Madam Chair, I do have one question.
Perfect.
When the cats have gone to the vet in previous visits, have they ever gone on veterinary visits separately before?
No.
Okay. So every other time they have gone together?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, as it relates to
case 2506.
Yeah. So just in part of this communication piece, I know you called twice on the 4th. Did you feel it was clear that when you called, you were asking to speak with Dr. Osmond?
Absolutely. And my wife was on the phone with me. We both were desperate to talk to the vet. We did not know at the time what this was. As I mentioned, we're both 66 years old. We both had cats as children. We had never seen this before a long time ago. And, you know, I believe it's because as a child, it would have been my parents' problem. So I don't know if it ever happened or not.
It's a parent's problem.
We got these cats in May of 2020 and during COVID, and the day after, 2 days after, my wife spent 11 hours at Mayo in emergency surgery, the cats were, you know, very bonded to us, and we had never had to take them separately before. So. I'm sorry, but to answer your question, both of us absolutely wanted to understand what was going on. Was it the medication, which is in their policy? I encourage you to look at their policy. They said, if you have a question about any of the effects of medication, you know, what? You know, you get to talk to a vet.
So when you made the request to have the hospital change their policy on informing owners about this aggression, was that just simply via the email that went to the clinic, or did you actually ask that in?
No, let me clarify. So, SOAP says they're going to call the next day. They don't call. They send a text. Text goes to the junk mail file. We see it, probably in the middle of a cat fight or something. We didn't do anything about it. On the 4th, things were so bad still, we called twice. Absolutely to talk to the doctor. When we were denied, and I feel that's when we were first abandoned, the opportunity to talk to the vet, I sent that email on the 5th, in part to try and get them to realize that we are in the middle of a big crisis. Probably didn't do the best job. The email's in the materials if you want to go back through it. I admit, I didn't do the best job on that. But again, not hearing anything, called on the 7th, and again, could not talk to the vet. And look, I don't think it's right that you can have a CBT terminate a relationship without me getting a chance to talk to the vet again. And the vet is the primary one responsible for the relationship I've been schooled in, and she didn't even get a part in the decision. And so
what was the reason for the delay in calling the clinic to begin with? There was a few days between the visit and the 4th when you called twice going, oh my God, this is not really bad. Was it just not as bad?
No, I was at Home Depot building barriers in our house. Our house has one room where we could, it's a very open house. And our bedroom is really the only room that was sufficient to lock a cat away in. Except, as somebody mentioned, they're Bengals. They know how to open the door. So we actually had to zip tie the door closed and leave the house through the backyard to get into the kitchen. So I had to go to Home Depot and buy materials to construct a barrier to use as a door in another room. We were just crazed, okay? And we didn't know, you know, we did not know what was going on, and we did not know enough because we didn't know. And so if a vet says in her SOAP she's going to call the next day, she should have called. That would be the right thing to do. And, you know, yeah, we were crazed, and we thought it was weird, and we didn't know what it was, and I was sitting there on Google, and we were trying to restrain the cats. And so we really, really wanted to talk to a vet on the phone.
Okay. I don't have any other questions on this case. Anybody else?
Any other questions on case 2506? No? Okay. So case 2507 regarding Wendy Patterson, DBM.
So if I may, just for your own, to assist you guys, go ahead.
Let's keep asking questions a little bit.
So, with regards to Dr. Patterson, who's a premise holder, who I understand you did not see during the course of this visit or aftermath, what is your biggest complaint that made you file 2507 against the premise holder?
A responsible veterinarian means veterinarian who is responsible to the board for compliance. I license veterinary premises with the laws and rules of this state and the federal government pertaining to the practice of veterinary, and responsible for the establishment of policy at such premises. Again, I'll go back to the policy that she told this board exists in 2021. Violated, violated, violated. In addition, she has the policy, she made the choice on failure to give estimates and maintain records. That she's the premise holder, she could have made a policy that we're going to do written estimates. Mesa did it, Scaredy Cat did it. If you do it, there's no question you're in line with board policy. If you don't do it, you take the risk. I don't know who this was. I still to the day don't know who this was. You testified that one was given, but I suggest they lied to the board. Second thing is sending records without a request. That is another policy issue. breaking the client, the veterinary client patient relationship. How can she let a CBT make that decision when the vet is ultimately responsible? Failure to properly refer. If there's a number of vets in this room, let's say one of your pets had an issue you could not handle, and you needed a specialized veterinarian, and you were referred to somebody who couldn't see you for a month. Would you consider that a valid referral? I certainly wouldn't, not if you're in the middle of a problem. So, and it was a problem that they created. The misrepresentation and false advertising, the things they have on their website, I can tell you, I was regulated for 30 some odd years as a CPA. What they have on their website would not be allowed for a CPA. It promises the world, promises stuff they can't deliver. And just the overall failure to communicate and show respect. As Mr. Nosley asked, I didn't swear. I did use the word accountable when I finally got so exhausted that I realized they weren't going to help me. It was like, you know, popping the balloon, and there it goes. It's gone. At that point, I was worn out on the 7th, and I said, they're not going to help us, and we're going to have to figure this out on our own. That shouldn't have been our job. They didn't even understand that they caused this problem. And yet, again, they said, well, we don't really understand behavior, except look at the soap. It says behavior in the plan. You can't reconcile those two things.
I don't have any other questions on 2507.
Okay, any other questions for case 2507? No. All right, case 2508. Any questions from board members?
So, I understand on the 7th that you actually talked to the office manager, and that's when you got the information for the referral. Can you describe to me how that conversation went?
You know, she actually did a reasonable job of describing it. I was so confused. I thought she was, and so stressed out, I thought she was referring me to Dr. Moffitt in her office, which is why I asked for her to make the appointment. I didn't realize that she was suggesting I call somebody else. What I learned afterwards studying your rules on referral is that, you know, that doesn't make any sense to me to not help us, because in retrospect, what I now get is they had no idea of the extent of the problem that they were causing because they left it in the hands of a receptionist on the 4th. They got the email on the 5th and were confused. And then I talked to, you know, CVD Watt on the 7th. Had we actually been able to talk to a vet like we should have per their office policy, and had they actually called them the 1st, none of this probably would have happened. We wouldn't have had the problem. We would have immediately separated the cats. We didn't know that. You asked what was happening on the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. Yeah, we were trying to separate the cats, but we weren't separating like they should be. And you may know, or if you don't know, I have a website now called Feline Non-Recognition Aggression. It has tons of articles on this. It has instructions for veterinarians that were not prepared by me, a layperson. They were prepared by vets or cat behaviors. So I now know a ton about this stuff. But on the 2nd, 1st, 2nd, 3rd, we were just clueless. We did not completely separate the cats. That, as Dr. Dotman provided in his declaration, if we had been told that on the 1st, maybe none of this would happen. But we were abandoned instead.
Okay. And when you called on the 7th, there wasn't any discussion around the termination of you as a client. No. You found that out later when you called back.
Yes, I called on the 13th, not having their letter in hand. I don't know if they, you know, walked in on a mule to the post office or what, but, you know, we're only a
you know, 10 miles apart in Arizona, and it took more than 6 days for the letter to arrive. So I called back on the 13th, again pleading for help, and was told I had been terminated.
Okay. I don't have any further questions on 2508. Any other questions for case 2508?
No. This is what now? Because again, I've listed the items that I think she's responsible for here.
Yeah.
Another question? All right. Well, seeing that there is no other questions, you can go ahead and step back.
I'm sorry?
You can go ahead and step back.
Okay.
Thank
Give
you.
Give me a second, please.
Yep. Do you have any additional remarks for separately for case 2506?
I would just like to make them collectively for all three cases.
Okay, all right, so for all three cases?
Yeah, and Dr. Patterson first wants to point out just a few things I would just raise.
We don't have any record of that phone call that you said you made on the 4th. I'm not disputing it, but it was not something that the receptionist wrote down, and apparently even by his own notes, it was a very short conversation. Our receptionists or CSRs do a really, really good job of documenting a phone call that has any substance to it, and they should have probably done something with that, but it was apparently a very short call.
If I may just interject, and one thing we do have in writing is his email. The complaint now makes it sound like he was demanding a call from a veterinarian. You have a copy of his email, and nowhere in his email does he demand that or ask that a veterinarian call him back. He discusses what he thinks they should do in terms of a policy or what they're going through on their end. But at the end, he just says, I would like this discussed among the vets and some feedback given to me. He didn't ask for the veterinarian to call. He wanted them to discuss this, which they did collectively. And ultimately, the discussion led to him being terminated as a client, which they have every right to do under R311-5011. A veterinarian is free to choose whom they shall serve. Go ahead.
Kind of on that point, too, the phone call on the 7th that he did talk to Tammy, he spoke with the boarding reception first, and she wrote down that he wanted either some behavior advice or referral or medication. Did not ask in either one of those conversations with either the boarding reception and her notes or with Tammy's recollection to really directly speak with Dr. Osmond. She did provide him the information he originally wanted, which was the referral to a behaviorist. And then I know Tammy was a little nervous. She does have in her notes here that that she did talk with Dr. Penn. And Jennifer, who's our practice our hospital administrator, just let them know that she had this very confrontational conversation. I remember hearing about it several days later. I don't know if I was in surgery that day and wasn't part of this conversation or was off. It's too long ago to go back and figure out. but I know she was upset when she hung up with the tone that he gave. And she did say, hey, is it okay? Anybody have a problem if we terminate? Nobody had a problem. So just to clarify, even though it is, she does have the authority from us to terminate difficult clients.
Yeah, Dr. Penn and Dr.
And Jennifer, yeah. She ran it past them.
It's kind of veered off in a different direction on the termination issue and the communication issue. But nothing that you've heard here today gives rise to a violation. Despite all the materials that you've been inundated with, and your analysis in this case boils down to a simple question. Does the standard of care of veterinarians in Arizona require a small animal practitioner to advise every cat owner that they see about feline non-recognition aggression at the time of discharge? And the answer is an emphatic no. He may want that, and he may be lobbying for that, and that's what he was berating our clients to do. And because of his behavior, which you got a little taste of, that's what led them to decide that they wanted to terminate him as a client, and that is their right. The standard of care does not require a veterinarian to advise feline clients of FNRA, and they're not required to tell owners that there's a possibility that their cat may become aggressive towards another cat when they get home, especially in this case where there was evidence that the owner was noticing behavioral changes in the cat before it even came to the appointment. There's no statute or regulation that was violated in this case, and that applies to the lack of a written estimate for the appointment. Verbal estimates are completely appropriate, and there's no requirement under the Practice Act that you memorialize that a verbal estimate was given. Discharge instructions. This cat was not hospitalized. Sure, they are considered or they're advertised as Horizon Animal Hospitals in their name. That doesn't mean that every pet that comes there is hospitalized. Hospitalized means kept overnight. I mean, everybody knows that. But that just shows the extent to which this complainant is throwing everything he can at the wall, hoping something sticks in terms of a violation. But if you look at the statutes or regulations and apply it to the facts of this case, there is no violation. With regard to the medical records, they were provided to the owner's regular veterinarian after he was terminated as a client. No good deed goes unpunished. That was done as a courtesy to the owners. No harm was done. If anything, again, that provides continuity of care so the regular veterinarian knows what transpired. There's no harm, and there's no privacy right for pet records. There's no HIPAA violation. Finally, I want to comment on all the letters of support, is what he calls them, and materials the complainant submitted to you about feline non-recognition aggression. They aren't letters and materials in support of a violation under our Practice Act. What they're basically asking to do, and what they are letters of support, is for you to adopt a new regulation or statute that requires veterinarians to do something, to advise clients about the potential for this feline non-recognition aggression. That's not your role as a vet board. You can't retroactively apply a new rule or statute and find a violation. Only the legislature can adopt statutes and regulations. And so to the extent the complainant and all his other supporters want a change in the law, they should go to the Arizona legislature. But it can't be used as a basis for a violation against my clients. So thank you for your attention in this very interesting case. And I trust that you will do the correct thing in this case, which is to dismiss it with no violation. Thank you.
Are there any more questions from board members? No? Okay. Seeing that there's none, this concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. Dr. James, I don't know if you have any general things or if you just want to start with 2506.
Yeah, I have a couple general things. I just want, there's a few things I heard in the conversation that I just kind of want to get out on the table, and then I'll take them one by one, if that's okay.
Okay.
There was a couple references in the plan for this pet, and behavior being one of them. And I just want to clarify that behavior doesn't necessarily mean that they're saying they're going to do the behavior. Behavior could be that they have a behavior problem, and it could be that they're going to refer.
Related to that.
So I just want to kind of clarify that. I feel like even for the non-veterinary members of the board, that I could see where that would have been in there, and just being referring to we have a behavior issue that we're going to address, right? I think with regards to this condition, I mean, certainly I've been practicing a long time. I've never seen it either. I've been a cat owner for longer, and I honestly, I I've never seen it in my own cats to this degree. I've seen little bits here and there, but never to this degree. So I sympathize with this owner because there's nothing worse than a pissed off cat. Like, I'm telling you, there's nothing worse than a pissed off cat. But what I would say is, I don't necessarily know that this condition links to that something happened at the clinic. So I just want to kind of get that out there as far as a cat can go to the clinic and pick up a smell of the clinic and come home with this. It doesn't mean that the veterinary staff or technicians did anything abnormal or stressful. It could just be the smells of the clinic. I think Mr. Stoll addressed the hospitalization. I do feel like if this cat was only there an hour, it wasn't technically hospitalized. So I just wanted to kind of clarify that. And I don't necessarily know that anyone can really cause this problem, right? This isn't a problem I can't say, I want to make Dr. Thompson's cat hate her other cat. I physically can't do that. Cats do this on their own. And so I don't necessarily know that you can technically cause this. You can do things to help prevent it, and you can do things in the aftermath, but I don't know that you can physically cause it. But at least in my perspective. But that's just a few comments. Let's go through them one by one. I think 2506 is Dr. Osmond, who was the attending doctor. I felt like medically, she did what was appropriate. I think there was concern about this estimate as to whether it was actually given or not. It seems like that came up after the fact. Like, I didn't hear about the estimate until everything else had happened, right? And so now we're really frustrated, and now the estimate becomes an issue. And I can see that. I mean, I can see where we're trying to figure out what is the quality of care being provided, and then you start looking and you start uncovering all these other factors, right? So I'm not downplaying it. I think we hear from the veterinary side it was provided verbally, and we hear from the owner that one was never provided at all. I don't know if Victoria, you want to weigh in at all on if it has to be documented. I think we've had cases before that it's been given verbally and not documented in the medical record. I think as a veterinary team, that sets you up for problems. I would not recommend giving things verbally that you're not putting in the medical record, but I don't know that that's actually a statute. Other than that, I feel like the other piece of 2506 was the fact that the owner didn't receive a call back the next day, as stated in the plan. And I think the doctor felt like the text was that call back, which I think is getting more and more commonplace. And had this doctor have ever been informed that the owner had called a couple times, might have actually wanted to get on the phone and actually talk to the doctor, or talk to the client. So I feel like, unfortunately, this doctor didn't even know this was going on. She wasn't involved in the conversation about the aggression. She wasn't involved in the conversation about the termination of the client. She didn't even know that the client had called multiple times having behavior issues, so I don't even know how we would have expected her to address it. So, did anyone else find anything in 2506 that were key points for them before I move on?
Just, and then this is applies to 2506 as well as the other cases, so I won't repeat it when we get to the other cases. But just to share is that as a state regulatory agency, we regulate based on state statutes, which are based on minimum standards of care and based on adopted administrative rules. We do not regulate individual premises SOPs or their standards of practice or their particular in-house policies. What we look at is, do they meet the minimum standard of what the statutes require? So I just wanted to be really clear on that. And our general rule is if...
Can I jump in real quick about
sure.
The SOP? That refers to medical records.
Oh, okay, thank you. I thought it was their standard operating procedure is what I was... thank you.
That's also what we call a medical exam.
Well, SOP...
Just to make it really confusing.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I'm a layperson. I have one more thing, if I may. Is our basic premise, if it's not in the records, medical records didn't happen. So that's kind of the rule of thumb we go by generally. And I really think it, some of the concerns could have been avoided, you know, by documenting the estimate and record. And that's my comments, Madam Chair.
Okay, so would you like me to make a motion on this case before I go on and talk about the others, or can I talk about the others in case